things for the committee. As you know, we're going to be in Hood River on Friday, and look forward to a hearing on Measure 37. The goal will be to kind of get an outline as to what some of the Measure 37 claims have been around the state, subdivisions, single homes, kind of get a sense as to what the overview is, and then also focus on the Measure 37 issue as it relates to Hood River County. Just for the audience and members of the committee, we have a new staff person here in Chris Crane, who used to work in legislative council, who is an attorney and can rewrite our land use laws if we ask him to, so we might ask him to do that. So he may be here on a number of occasions. He's going to be working in the Capitol Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays is the arrangement. And this bill, Senate Bill 406, is the first committee bill where we really are taking a close look at Measure 37 head-on. And I've asked Senator Schrader to come and discuss his concept on how to approach it. We're not going to move the bill out today, but I really want to use this bill as a platform for identifying some of the major issues and discussing how we ought to handle them. And look forward to hearing from Senator Schrader, but also from other members in the audience as to the specific issues that may be raised in the discussion. So with that, let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 406. Senator Schrader? Yeah, don't let me forget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just one other thing is that Senator Burdick is ill, so she's not here. Senator Shields is also ill, but he's listening on the speakerphone, so if you hear a voice from the platform, that's who it is.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee, Mr. Chair. I'd like to outline a little bit about Senate Bill 406. Answer some real basic questions. You know, why this bill? Why do we even need a bill? What's this bill all about? And where do we go from here? What do I hope to accomplish with it? Basically, Senate Bill 406 is my attempt to address, you know, Oregonians' concerns about the balance between our quality of life and fairness in our land use system. The balance between individuals' property rights and livable communities, strong and viable agricultural and natural resource industry. The passage of Measure 37, while not the original genesis of this, I believe furthers the opportunity for this bill and work in this area to continue. My original interest in this bill grew out of some work I did actually back in the 2001 session, then being a House member there. Why do we really need a bill? I'm sure you've discussed this, or we'll discuss this ad nauseum over the next few months. Measure 37 is certainly bellwether. 60% of Oregonians saying, hey, we've got to do something here about our land use system, either compensation, waiver, you know, better, friendlier land use regulations. And you're going to be determining, hopefully, to some degree, what your interpretation of what the Oregonians wanted when they passed Measure 37. Measure 37 does not establish a uniform process for dealing with claims across the state. That's a big issue for a lot of jurisdictions and individuals that want to know how and when to file claims. It doesn't address how to file the claims. It doesn't talk about how to determine fair market value for some of these issues that are not complete takings, as have been reported in the press. It doesn't talk about which jurisdiction takes responsibility for these claims. Is it a state law that's requiring it? Is it a local law? Is it a metropolitan service district? Or is it an agency, frankly? There's nothing in there about the appeals process. If the landowner and jurisdictions disagree on whether there's a valid claim, again, what the fair market value would be, and even the form of compensation. Frankly, Measure 37, much like Measure 7, is full employment, I think, for the attorneys. No offense intended, Mr. Chairman, sir.
I'm going to change my area of practice.
So it's simply, I think, like Measure 5. It required some tinkering and reworking by your state legislature, led to Measures 50 and 47. Measure 7 required 114 pages of attorney general opinion to try and understand all the issues associated with it. While some of those are clarified in Measure 37, many are not. And indeed, Senate Bill 406 is an outgrowth of the work that Max and I did, Representative Max Williams and I did back in the 2001 session. I believe this bill is really important. not the bill perhaps in all its entirety by itself, but if this body is interested in coming to some sort of conclusion and determination about some of the vagaries of Measure 37, trying to provide some certainty both the development community, citizens of this state, and people interested in the land use process, we need a template. One thing I learned in 2001 when Representative Williams and I tried this, we worked long and hard for about 5 months, did a great deal of work, had established several different working groups, but it was tough to keep them all going, inform the state legislature, get elements of a bill out in that time period. You will fail if you try and do this from scratch. And we will have the chaos that is going to ensue shortly as different people appeal, try and figure out what's going on. So I'd really urge you to at least look at this as a template for starting the discussion. A lot of great work went into this. I hate to see us recreate the wheel. You know, 5 months of work, while there may be some differences of opinion, very serious differences of opinion on some of the elements of this bill, some of it's pretty straightforward. Claims processes that have already been worked on by some of the very members you see in this room here. Some of the advocates on both sides of the issue, and some of the local jurisdictions are very concerned about how they deal with this. So what is this bill? I'll give you the Senator Schrader nutshell version of this whole thing. And I think I've passed out a section-by-section summary, so you can at least allude to it. You don't have to read the whole bloody thing. You can kind of see what section deals with what, and if you're moderately interested in that section, you can go right to it and look into it yourself. But this bill basically transforms Oregon's land use planning process into an innovative, dynamic, outcome-based process, rather than what I think has now become a fairly inflexible, didactic, and bureaucratic, rule-oriented process. At least as seen by many Oregonians. This particular bill recognizes and respects the rights of property owners in this whole land use system of ours. Compensation and opportunity to build are built into the process in Senate Bill 406. Compensation comes in the form of cash, tax breaks, transfer development opportunities, variation in setbacks, densities, designs, fees, regulation. Many citizens just want to build. Not get cash. Many local governments don't have the liquid resources to even provide compensation as a result of the new ordinance. The new land use mantra that's in this bill would be to try and find a way to get to yes when someone comes in asking local jurisdictions, how do I go about doing something with my property? Hopefully the answer would be yes or close to yes as long as the environmental and livability outcomes are preserved. The bill provides a funding source for state and local governments that need to offer compensation for landowners. The bill provides an opportunity for a local government to waive regulation. This innovative concept I referred to earlier of transferring your development rights is catching on around the country. It is also included in this bill. This allows local governments to encourage growth in areas that are interested and wanting growth that might even be of more profit, more value to the individual landowner. And it also would encourage solid planned use communities around our state of Oregon, which I think is a huge benefit also. The claims process in this bill respects and protects both citizens and communities. As I alluded to earlier, in the work groups during 2001, local governments spent a lot of time assisting with the claims and appeals language you'll see in Senate Bill 406. Eligibility is very simple. I think it's the only simple thing in this bill. If you had the right to build when you bought the property, you get compensation. If there's even a fast-track process in this bill that's based on accepted regional land values that would be worked out. If the landowner doesn't want to go through some sort of lengthy process to fight whether or not it's the fair market value or getting the exact right amount and who's responsible, as long as they meet those simple criteria I just mentioned, they go into a fast-track process, get their money, go home a happy camper.
Senator Schrader, just a question right there is, do you envision a provision for waiver?
Yes, at this point in time, I certainly do. Particularly if within the time periods that are in this bill, local governments are unable to find a way to compensate these landowners, they get to build.
So this bill contains a mechanism for allowing that waiver?
Yes. I don't know if it's referenced exactly as waiver, but right to build.
Okay.
There is a one-year statute of limitations for all these claims, so local governments and the property owners can have some certainty as to their liability exposure on one hand and timeliness of payments or right to build on the other. This bill sets a threshold for compensation at 25% for a single restriction Local governments would also be able to offset infrastructure and tax break adds against the claimed regulatory takings in determining that fair market value. There's also a 45% cumulative threshold for multiple regulations over a four-year period that would protect a lot of landowners from what we would call regulatory creep. It also allows communities to net out infrastructure improvements that add to the value of the property in question over that same time period, just like with a single restriction. I think importantly, there is a minimum of new bureaucracy in this bill. A small authority with an ombudsman's office that is established in the Department of Land Conservation and Development. The authority would be the determining agency for figuring out the rules and processes for the state. The ombudsman's office is designated to assist individuals, businesses, and a lot of our small local communities that don't have big, huge planning staffs to respond, hopefully, in a much more proactive, positive manner to landowners concerned about their property rights in their particular locations. In addition to administering these programs, the authority, Compensation and Conservation Authority, would have public hearings held locally to be more citizen-friendly, as a result of any local regulations or restrictions that come out. The appeals process would use the tax magistrate courts rather than go through LUBA, which just basically to avoid any appearance or of conflict of interest, trying to gain, say, a little more confidence in our land use system and the fairness therein. A funding mechanism is established in Senate Bill 406 for the compensation part of the program. It uses some of the tax increment and exception benefit, the results from developing properties around the state. That money that would come in is split 60-40, at least in this bill, certainly open for a lot of conversation, between paying claims and developing an infrastructure fund for local governments to actually serve these new developments.
Senator Fitter, is there some analysis as to how much money would be raised?
It would be about 60. 4 years ago, it would have been about $60 million a biennium. Representative Williams and I were trying to achieve an ongoing revenue source that would pay claims and be available for future claims over a period of time. And our goal at that time was to come up with a revenue raising opportunity that came to about $60, $65 million a biennium.
I mean, if it's okay, I'd kind of like to interrupt you as you go along.
No, I'm almost done.
I guess committee invite the same. But I just want to know more about the revenue source. Tax incrementation, increment?
Yeah, I think if you go, you probably have, I can look at my own cheat sheet here, sir. Go to sections
23 through 27, isn't it?
Yeah, 23 through 27. There are two opportunities here. We also looked at some other alternatives besides these. I think it gets to the meat of the matter. But section 29 is, I think, subsection 3. Net fair market value is determined under subsection 2. Impose a compensation conservation tax on the net fair market value of the land as determined under that at a rate of $20 per thousand of net fair market value. And then a little bit later on, there is in section 34, if the exception value for a year is a positive number, there would be a $5 per thousand exception value tax, a one-time imposed at that point. We spent a lot of time in 2001. There was talk of looking at reducing the discount on your property tax payments. As you all remember, you get paid a 3% discount if you pay your property tax payments on time. If you reduce that by half, that would also generate about the same amount of money. There's also a discussion about a straight tax increment financing mechanism that would be done based on the increased tax increment around the state. You could probably have a lower value, a lower assessment that would be included in this particular formula if you wanted to go at it that way.
Does this have Measure 5 implications?
It has Measure 5 implications. That's why Section 41, the last section, would require a constitutional amendment, probably in my opinion anyway, to go out to the voters. So they would also have a say in this whole process. It wouldn't just be us legislators. about hopefully exempting local governments that offer tax breaks or whatever under their compensation mechanisms from the restrictions of Measure 5.
As far as the financial analysis, what can you have that you can show the committee? Not necessarily right now, but do you have something that you can...
Yeah, I'd be glad to share with the committee. I have several documents, and actually the Legislative Revenue Office has some documents I know from 2001 that they would be willing to share with you also.
Okay. I mean, I think it would be helpful for us to see that.
Well, this is one of the big rocks that our work foundered on near the end of session. When we talked all since, it's always a lot tougher to come out with a bill that has implications. As co-chair of Ways and Means, I'm not real enthusiastic about using general fund for this particular endeavor. But if we come to some sort of fair, I mean, people are being able to develop the property, and hopefully there's a balance that we can work out with the citizens and the development interests here in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Thank you.
And actually, Mr. Chair, your questions are timely. That's basically the gist of the bill that you have before you. As I said, I hope this is a template that one can use to at least shortcut some of the discussion. With your permission, I would like to be able to work with some of the interested parties on this, establish maybe some work groups. I know there's some informal things going on at this point in time. See if we can get some consensus around some of these things. Bring certain elements, maybe not the whole bill at once, but certain elements to your attention, your committee's attention, and frankly to Representative Garrard's committee's attention at the same time. Because one of the other problems we had in 2001 that, you know, all these great work groups doing all these great things, but unless legislators know what's going on and other interest groups that for some reason or other don't feel they're totally vested in some of those work groups, we're going to founder again. So it's important to get this process going, get it out there and open so people can participate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Schrader, Section 12, back to the Oregon Tax Court. You use the phrase conflict of interest to avoid conflict. Could you explain what you meant by that?
In 2000, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, there was some concern in the 2001 session that the Department of Land Conservation and Development and the Land Use Board of Appeals were controversial in many Oregonians' minds, and so our goal was to get some of the appeals process out from under that rubric and allow for a theoretically more unbiased look, if you will, at the process, and that's why the Tax Court of Appeals.
Well, the reason I said that's the bill we heard a couple of days ago, I forget the number, that would essentially bypass LUBA in some circumstances also. I think that should be a discussion point for a future work group. We haven't made really adjustments to LUBA in some time, and I think it's still out in the minds of Oregonians. I still think people shake their head when you say the phrase LUBA or LCDC.
I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, certainly there are parts of the state where that's more prevalent than others, and I think that this is going to be built for all Oregonians. You have to have that balance. I agree with you.
Just for the right, you said it, and then I've started to write down all the percentages that you were talking about. But
it's in the bill.
To help me understand, this bill 406 does have compensation for landowners whose their property has been devalued because of regulation somehow.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Byer?
Thank you. And I don't know if Senator Schrader is the right person to answer this question or not, but what strikes me funny is the first thing in the bill that it requires a 3/5 majority to pass, so this is a tax-raising bill. Is this a constitutional bill? I mean, this bill as printed, in my opinion, is unconstitutional.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, certainly we can't do anything unless there is a constitutional element here. The whole point of introducing this bill to this committee was to get a discussion going. And we would probably want to have this raised and developed on the House side since there's revenue-raising implications.
Anything else?
I've got a lot of questions about it, but I'd like to hear what people have to say about it.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to try to move the bill today.
Mr. Chair, point of order. If it requires a 3/5 majority, why wasn't that caught before SB was put on it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, we talked with LC and realized this was a discussion item. It is understood that this is to be a template just for the discussion, introduce any bill that got legs on it under the auspice of the House.
And I just comment to the committee that, as I said earlier, we're not intending to move this bill today. You may have a point that we could never move this bill But this is a discussion that we need to have in terms of how are we going to address Measure 37, what are the components of that kind of bill, and that's why I wanted to use this bill as a means to have the discussion, such as the compensation mechanism. So I would like to continue that discussion with your indulgence.
Well, that's what I say. I'd like to hear what the people in the audience have to say.
Okay. A couple more questions I have for Senator Schrader. Is there any analysis as to how much money there is in the short run right now for the existing claims under Measure 37? Or let me ask it a different way. You create a fund where it's continually funded. I assume that would be to pay the ongoing claims for compensation when there's a regulatory taking. What about the initial set of claims that are coming in right now?
Well, the way, Mr. Chair, good question. The way when Representative Williams and I were working on this 2 years, 4 years ago now, there were quite a bit of claims potential there. We actually did a fairly extensive analysis of the potential for claims based on land use patterns in the state. We had a lot of cooperation from counties around the state on this and from our own Department of Administrative Services. Unfettered claims would probably run into billions of dollars. If there is an interest in one house, as we've heard some of the proponents of the measure say, you know, just a house or a few, you know, partitions of their property, then the claims we determined fell into hundreds of millions of dollars. And our goal was to queue people up. And I've got a whole other section we can add to this for your discussion. I think purposes probably a good idea to do so. It talks about queuing people up pre-1975, pre-1985, pre-1993, because those were real key points in Oregon's land use history. And we would address the older claims first and work our way through as the dollars were available. And the same thing would hold true. Those people that are most recent in the claims process, you know, for new claims moving forward, would be at the back of that queue under that type of scenario.
I see. What incentive would there be for the government to waive claims as opposed to say, well, you get your money when we get it someday to pay you?
Well, there is a time frame, and we'd have to adjust the new claims issue out there, and people would have to understand, I think, up front, unless we're willing to have some sort of huge tax burden on the people of the state of Oregon, that we would have to queue the claims up, and that would have to go. That would be a new section in the bill, and you would have to address that and give them a date certain. The bill here, for instance, particularly talks about any new claims. There is a date certain within 1 year, and if that doesn't happen, if for some reason the local jurisdiction can't raise the money, can't come up with some reasonable alternatives, or frankly just doesn't want to, you know, pay. They're fine with waiving this restriction because there are different locales and different regions of our state that have different views of the land use system. Then the potential landowner would have the chance to build their property.
But let's say they preferred not to waive, but there was no money to compensate. After a year, they would have to waive.
Yeah. They build.
Okay. And the 25% threshold they have built in, would that trigger compensation for any diminution in value above 25%, or would it, once you hit that mark, then the entire amount would be subject to compensation?
That's another point that you'd have to work out here with the work group or as part of the committee discussion. That could go. That's a very valid point. We argued back and forth on that. I'm not going to espouse one or the other, frankly. I think our goal was just to deal with the 25% reduction in the taking at the time. And those values are admittedly somewhat arbitrary, but they're based also on trying to understand what happened in Florida, what's happened in Texas, and some of the other states that have gone down this route. It's actually, in my opinion, it's probably a fairly low bar to set. We tried not to go too low, trying to find what was reasonable.
Did your work group do any analysis as to what this might mean in terms of on-the-ground development, whether is what would eventually result would be a lot of houses on farmland, a single house on farmland, as opposed to, no, this would result in big developments in Hood River?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that was hard to establish because we didn't know how many people would want to waive and how many people wanted money. And so we did not get into that level of discussion. We knew what the potential claims are. We did a lot of work on the potential claims that I just outlined, but beyond that, we did not try and figure out who was going to pick one versus the other.
Did you do analysis on the appraisal process? I mean, it's a huge uncertainty as to how you appraise.
Yeah.
In this situation, how is that addressed?
This bill has sections lined out on how both the local jurisdictions and the state compensation authority will go through this fair market evaluation. Lines it out so that there is some certainty there, which certainly, again, is lacking in both the Measure 7 and Measure 37, have made it very difficult to figure out how to determine fair market value. And then what would the offsets be? I mean, if your property is now worth $90,000, is it worth $90,000 because land values have just gone up? That sounds fair. But if it's because you now have a sewer and water and a road nearby, that's a little different story. It also allows the local governments then to offset some of the improvements that they are responsible for against some of the costs. The other big issue you need to come to grips with is what about all the farm tax deferral? That has not been paid. Is it right to go back only 5 years, or do you go back the full years when this property is first owned by the individual?
And how does your bill address that?
It does not. It references it would be established by rule. There's room to work on that.
Mr. Chair.
Let's do Senator Shields. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't know if you can hear me or if you have to move a microphone over.
No, we hear you just fine.
Okay, great. First, Senator Schrader, it's good to be talking to a horse doctor because I feel like I've been kicked by a horse. I wanted to tell you that 2 weeks ago I went back to Memphis to a national conference of agricultural chairs, something I did last year. There was an awful lot of talk about right to farm and urban encroachment onto farmland in various states across the country. It seems to me that we are looking at the land use right end of things, and we're kind of forgetting the farmer in this. Have you given much thought to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, we have tried to. Again, this is part of the balance. The farming community is of mixed mind on the whole idea of I'll say this. I think if you look at the Farm Bureau as an indicator, they're certainly against having lots of new development in farmland. However, they have a strong statement in their handbook about compensation. You know, if there is a regulatory taking, that they should, property owners should be compensated for that. So we've tried to include some of that in our product. I will say this, that in 2001, I don't think farmers or Farm Bureau were involved as much as they should have been in the work we did. And that was a big problem we had in that I would say the Farm Bureau, certain environmental groups, the realtors, probably a number of other groups are not involved as much in some of the early development of this as we probably needed to do, and that's hopefully we'll correct this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for letting me be here today to hear this bill. And thank you, Senator Schrader, for all your hard work, because I know you've been working on this for many years. I have lots of questions, but I'm just going to stick to one and right now, which has to do with the double-dipping issue, which was alluded to before. And I see under Section 25 that you are trying to get at that. I guess the question I have is about if Measure 37 is retroactive, how do we get to the fact that if we're going to be paying somebody compensation, then how we address that? You know, the double dipping where somebody's been receiving farm deferral or whatever. There's lots of ways that we pay people through easements, the CREP program, many programs that I'm certainly aware. Do you have any sense as to how we could deal with that retroactively? I mean, that's money that could be owed to the state of Oregon, to the people of Oregon.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder. Well, part of that, it would be taken care of and determining the fair market value. The process that would be set up would hopefully take into account any particular tax breaks or, as I said, infrastructure improvements that have increased the value of this land over a long period of time. The other issue is deed restrictions. You know, if you are getting compensation or have gotten compensation, and again, the work groups and committee can decide as of when, what time, you shouldn't be allowed to get compensation again. The next owner of that house shouldn't be able to re-subdivide that house. Some of that is taken care of in this bill, but my guess is the committee will find room to improve that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you somewhat, I think, answered my question. It was just kind of another format question, is that I guess I can ask it easiest way. Is this just a reprint of the bill that you guys worked on in 2001?
It's a little, it's close to the Dash 16 amendments that were done May 29th in 2001 with some changes that I've alluded to, particularly some of this fast track process, some of the ombuds stuff.
Okay, I guess maybe I should ask the question. I did not see anywhere in the bill where Measure 37 was repealed.
That is correct.
Well, just following up on that, is that... I think it's assumed that if we're doing this, we're essentially replacing Measure 37 with something that is meant to be functional.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I think that the goal here is, I view this as like a Measure 5 process, Measure 5, Measure 47, Measure 50, where you're trying to work this thing through. I think ultimately it'll be up to the voters to decide if, as you pointed out, Senator, we're going to have to do some sort of constitutional aspect to this wherever a bill gets going in this building, and we would go ahead and address that issue with Oregonians. I look at this as more of an implementation, trying to decide what Oregonians really want.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, there's a huge difference. Measure 5, Measure 47, Measure 50, and Measure 7 were all constitutional. So in order to change anything in them, you had to go to the voters or you write statutory law to implement them. Measure 37 is a statute. We have the authority to change statutes if we so choose. We can repeal statutes by saying they are repealed in the bill. So I guess, and that's why I asked the question, I wanted to know if you had, in your drafting this, if you intended to repeal Measure 37, if you wanted parallel tracks, or, you know, if this...
That's fair. Mr. Chair, Senator Barr, I didn't intend parallel tracks. I was hoping to work something out that would be acceptable to the state in terms of fixing and or making Measure 37 work. You're correct in pointing out those are constitutional. But in 2001, we actually had three elements of this bill. The piece you see before you is pretty much the statutory portion of it. And then there was a... constitutional provision that would have required the citizens of Oregon to get engaged. And no point in going down that road if this doesn't have any horsepower, because as you point out, this is really the implementing language of any type of fix for Measure 37. I would personally welcome going back out to the people and seeing, is this what you understood? And I think this would be great validation. I don't have any big problem. This is with going back to the people. This is a big, big issue, and we're going to have to get, I think, their buy-in. And unless you're pretty prescient and feel real comfortable speaking for them, this is fairly complicated stuff. And with the Measure 5 element alone, I think it requires us to go back out. So it would be an opportunity to get some validation.
Mr. Chair, that's with your funding mechanism dealing with Measure 5, that's true. You know, obviously that would take a constitutional referral to break the Measure 5 cap. You know, there are probably other funding elements to a compensation plan that do not require a constitutional revision or not revision, constitutional amendment.
Real estate transfer tax?
I didn't say it.
Okay.
But I also think you'd have a hard time getting that one started in the Senate.
Okay. Anything else? Senator Schrader, I appreciate your coming here. I like your innovation in looking to the tax court. You know, when you got Luba and maybe the Supreme Court, tax court might be a place to go. But I noticed that they're signed up on our list, so I'll be interested in their response on possibly taking this on. But thank you very much. I would love to get more of the analysis behind this. The financial analysis, for example, I mean, if you could make that available to the committee staff and any other of the supporting information, I think it would be very helpful. But I appreciate your leadership in pushing this forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an issue long overdue to come to some conclusion on.
Thank you. Let's have, is it Roller K? And Bob Stacey, please. Yes, that'd be great. Thank you. Okay.
afternoon, Chair, Senators of, and members of the committee. My name is Roger Kay.
Oh, Roger Kay, I'm sorry.
Roger, that's okay. My handwriting is poor. I wrote a letter and submitted it to the Chair and the members of the committee. The original letter written to Senator Peter Courtney was delivered last week, and we had a brief meeting with Senator Courtney and yourself, Senator Ringo. We find some things sadly lacking in Measure 37 that we'd like to see corrected, whether it be in a legislative amendment or a constitutional amendment, whichever the legislature feels is appropriate. And that is six specific requests that we have to involve the public in the process of claims and settlements by the jurisdictions. And those are highlighted items 1 through 6. I don't know if I want to read each of them to you. You should have had a copy of this letter before today's hearing, so I'm just going to let them stand. But there is definitely that lacking in Measure 37, the ability for neighbors to comment. Even though Measure 37 specifically states it's not a land use decision, anything affecting communities deserve public input by neighbors, and we feel that's a sorely lacking point in this. Those are the six specific requests we'd like to see corrected from Measure 37. The other important issues, I've highlighted them, and they're merely in a in an outline form. I personally attended the procedural and the application ordinance provision hearings at the county, Marion County, and the City of Salem. If you were to go to each of these jurisdictions and see how each of these were formulated, you'd be quite surprised at the different rules that were put in place by the jurisdictions. So what's lacking in Measure 37 is the arbitrary nature at which local jurisdictions are both applying Measure 37 and not providing guidance in their communities for Measure 37 claims. And that's something that state legislation can correct. The other thing I want to briefly mention was in the Statesman Journal today, there was a letter by someone in Polk County that talked about thanking all the voters for passing Measure 37 because her grandmother left her property. But she may not be aware that she may not be able to make a claim, not be able to provide a valid claim, because Measure 37 states that the claim depends on when she owned the property, not when her grandmother owned it. So her development rights... she may be wrong on her development rights, depending on those dates, and that's another thing, which is a lot of confusion. There was a lot of confusion in the voters, and even a lot of the people that voted for it, people who are making claims, are finding out that they're not eligible for them because the measure was so poorly written. So whatever the legislature decides, it's extremely important that all of these things be clarified, whether in constitutional or legislative process. And the last thing I want to mention was annexations. The City of Salem provided in their Measure 37 ordinance that annexations, that properties annexed, those owners would have to sign a Measure 37 waiver. Otherwise, the city would not welcome them into their boundary. And that's something that's not addressed in Measure 37 and can be a difficult proposition for the jurisdiction. So that's basically the points I wanted to make. Do you have any questions?
Well, thank you very much. I just have a couple questions. On the second page, you have the specific requests. Point number 3 says a state-mandated right to a decreased tax valuation based on the impact of neighboring Measure 37 claims. I assume that means that if a person develops their property pursuant to Measure 37 and that reduces the value of the neighboring property, that neighbor will be able to say, I want to pay less taxes because of that devaluation.
Senator Ringo, yes, I believe that's what we meant. Some of these points were delivered to me by somebody else.
Okay.
So I'm not really clear as to exactly what he meant on that, but I'm assuming that because neighbors to Measure 37 claims may be adversely impacted, they should also have the right to file some sort of equivalent claim to a jurisdiction for compensation based on diminution of the property value.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Stacey?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bob Stacey, 1000 Friends of Oregon. I want to add my voice to those who've already praised Senator Schrader. As a representative in the 2001 session, he and former Representative Max Williams undertook an enormous effort to try to bring together a wide variety of parties to find common ground on replacement legislation for what was recognized as a not workable measure, Measure 7. 1,000 Friends of Oregon was one of those who, as Senator Schrader suggests, came late to the party. I think we were invited in about the Dash 15 amendments. My predecessors first got involved at about that stage. And I had no involvement, and so I clearly don't know these provisions or the rest of that set of proposals as the senator does. But there's a lot of work here. And as the senator said in his opening remarks, rather than start from scratch on a job that I think this assembly has before it, to try to make workable a measure which clearly has popular will behind it but appears not to be workable as passed, we should not overlook the hard work that was done in 2001. I want to speak in favor of a number of concepts in this package and offer my hesitancy on some others, with all due respect to the senator. First, I think the fundamental principle that's reflected here is providing means for payment rather than waiver for providing compensation to property owners unfairly affected by land use regulation. The previous witness, Mr. Kay, has talked about some unfair implications for neighbors resulting from development that's incompatible with its surroundings, development on lands that are zoned the same as the parcel that's the subject of a waiver, development which imposes burdens on surrounding farmers and other uses. Those are the unfair aspects of the waiver mechanism. I would hope that the Assembly could find a way to make the fairness goal of Measure 37 work without imposing unfairness on others. And focusing on payment rather than waiver is an important step. The senator has spoken to waiver provisions in Senate Bill 406. The ones I find, particularly in Section 4, speak to using those provisions of local regulations which provide flexibility and enable the local government to avoid imposing more than the allowed amount of property value reduction. So the land and development benefit provisions provide that a modification, variance, or adjustment of a restriction can be used by a local government to avoid triggering compensation by ensuring that sufficient value is retained by development on the property. Those are portions of the prospective provisions of this measure. The measure speaks both to future regulatory changes and to retroactive application of fairness to regulations that already exist. Section 2 is the prospective section, and it has a very interesting approach. It's one that's new to the law of Oregon. It identifies a bright line, a percentage. If a local government or state regulation reduces the current value of property more than that percentage, then the government must pay compensation for the reduction in value. But there's some leeway provided, and then there's a bright line once crossed which triggers compensation. What this provides is real impetus for government to carefully assess the potential impact on property value of new regulations, to consult closely with property owners. I think the senator said, to try to get to yes, to find a way to protect public interest with new regulations, but not go too far. A lot more dialogue, a lot more fact-finding, a lot more, frankly, negotiation about whether a regulation really should be adopted in the form proposed. But what it provides, that Measure 37 has passed, doesn't provide, is continuing opportunity for cities and counties in this state to respond to changing circumstances and adopt careful new regulations that try to protect the public interest. Presently, the rule of law under Measure 37, which is law, is that any reduction in value triggers a requirement for compensation. And I submit that that ties the hands of local government absolutely in a way that separates Oregon from every other state in the United States. This provides some flexibility while also providing a bright line a line across which local government or state government cannot go without compensating. That's an interesting concept. It's clearly one that, in light of the passage of Measure 37, needs to be thought through and looked at very carefully.
Mr. Stacey, the other states that have compensation mechanisms, and I think we've referenced Florida
and Texas,
do they have a threshold requirement?
Both of them, as I understand it, Senator, and members of the committee, I'm not an expert on the Florida or Texas provisions, contain a threshold and then contain a great deal of flexibility about a judicial determination about whether it goes too far, as opposed to over 25% you pay. It triggers a judicial review opportunity.
I see.
But that's my understanding.
But there would be a threshold before you'd even get to that judicial review.
I believe so, but one should ask that question of someone who's more of an expert in the Florida legislation.
Okay.
Section 7, as I understand the bill, provides for retroactive relief for property owners who are adversely affected by regulations that existed before the effective date of this bill. And it focuses the retroactive relief on regulations that apply to property owners in farm and forest zones, and focuses the standard for relief on people who were not able to build a house, or, as the Senator says, a couple of houses on farm or forest land because of our statewide planning rules and their implementation by local ordinances. We believe that is the right focus for retroactive application of fairness. It looks at a measure of harm and a measure of expectation, which is that somebody wasn't allowed to build a house, as opposed to some of the claims that are being filed today. Somebody wants to build a casino and shopping center. Someone wants to build an 840-unit residential urban density subdivision in the Hood River Valley. That's an entirely different level of expectation, and it is the kind of change that imposes dramatic and drastic impacts on farm and other neighbors. With respect to the sponsor of the measure, the proposal in this legislation, whether it's germane and properly before this body or not, to amend the Constitution to provide for new property tax authority by local governments or the state, I would submit is not at all likely to occur, not at all likely to be approved by the voters. And if we are to accomplish prompt relief for the property owners who have been promised that relief by Measure 37, we should not and cannot await constitutional amendment action in order to give us the capacity to do that through compensation. I would go further and suggest that under the current circumstances that the state faces, it is extraordinarily unlikely that you will find yourselves able to initiate new revenue for this purpose. I don't want to discourage you from finding the creativity to do so, but I would suggest that the committee pursue options that would not require new revenue to be developed. And this bill contains such a mechanism. It provides for a marketable system of credits. They're called transferable development credits under this legislation. Section 18 defines and describes them. They are innovative for Oregon. They've been used in few communities in Oregon. But various forms of transferable development credit programs are used as part of planning and zoning in some 100 communities in states from Washington to Florida. Again, I'm not an expert. In my testimony, I cite at least one expert here in Oregon who could be called upon to help develop this concept further, Mr. Wolf at Portland State University. But the idea is simple enough that even a novice like me can understand it. The folks who've been told they can't build a house on agricultural land by our land use planning program because it's not a farm dwelling are issued a credit, a development credit, by the state of Oregon in exchange for a covenant under which they recognize that they cannot in the future claim the right to build a house. The state, working with local communities, provides additional new areas for urban development in Oregon and then makes those areas available only when developers purchase those credits from property owners in the rural part of the state. It's a market-based mechanism that enables money to flow from people who gain from new development opportunities that don't exist today and compensate people who are unable to use their land in a way they may have intended when they first acquired it before the adoption of land use regulations. It's a simple concept. The details around implementing it properly, ensuring that the cash flow from new transactions matches the demand at the current time, the possibility that we might create a bonding mechanism to make that cash available early enough, those are questions for experts, and I think that expertise is available here in the state to develop a program in detail and develop it promptly.
Mr. Stacey?
Sir. Mr. Chairman.
There's just a couple of questions about that. The details, that's referenced in this bill. I think there's a lot of details that would be
Indeed.
Have to be added, correct?
Indeed. There's a system authorized in the measure, Mr.
Right.
Chairman, providing additional confidence that such a system would work, I think, is critical to ensuring that we can leave this building in June with a measure that we're confident would work on the ground, and that's something we're committed to help with.
Who has the expertise to put that together?
I would start with Mr. Wolf.
Is this Greg Wolf?
This is Greg Wolf. I would suggest Richard Benner, who worked on this concept when he was in state government, is now at Metro, their deputy legal counsel and planning manager. He has been working on it in the interim. My understanding is that in 2001, the senator can correct me, the state was asked to inventory public lands owned by the state that could be surplus and could be situated so they would have market value for such purposes. That's one opportunity. Another opportunity is areas added to potentially rapid growing parts of the state where the value gained could go to property owners in less rapidly developing areas of the state. There needs to be a market for these credits. You can't simply create a zone, what's called a receiving zone here, and expect it to happen. But there is potential development demand that could be tapped for this purpose.
Do you know of financial analysis that has been done, how this might work? I mean, rather than just a framework of
right.
how the concept, but really how many dollars might be generated and.
That'd be a question for the senator or for those gentlemen I named, Mr. Benner, Mr. Wolf. Clearly, the amount of development coming to the state, the roughly million people who will come here between now and 2030, the amount of development that will be generated by those million new residents, the amount of that will be captured in new urban growth areas, those additions to urban growth boundaries or these potential new urban growth areas established on state lands or in other locations. That's the arithmetic that needs to be done. And then the other part of the computation is, of course, getting a better handle on how many rights are going to be recognized under this measure. If it's an urban level subdivision or a shopping center, it's going to require a great deal more transferable development rights to say we'll compensate you for all that than if we're recognizing the expectations of property owners who weren't able to build homes.
Thank you very much.
Okay. One last point, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
There are issues that are addressed in Measure 37 as passed that are not addressed here. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't point out at least one of them. Measure 37 includes among its definitions of land use regulations the forest practices rules of the State Board of Forestry and says that reductions in value to private forest land resulting from the application of the rules is compensable. This measure is silent, as I read it, on the forest practices rules. Forest practices industry has made it clear, both to this committee and in other forums, that businesses in that industry expect to be, as they put it, protected from significant loss in value of their timber investment from future changes in the forest practices rules. And my suggestion would be that any effort to modify or replace Measure 37 should directly address that concern of that industry. I'd be glad to answer any further questions.
Hey, I have a question for you. I guess really going back to Mr. Kay's testimony, and one of his points was that a state-mandated right to compensation due to de facto taking resulting from loss of value of the from the neighbor's property. Could you describe that concept, please?
I am sympathetic to the concept. I don't think I would describe it in exactly the same terms that Roger used. The impact upon a property owner who's contiguous to a claim let's take a farmer who has an urban level development next to him, is going to be economic, and it's going to be very significant. There's a loss of value to that neighbor. There is no opportunity under Measure 37 to get recompense for that loss of value. The argument here is that is a government-authorized imposition that's at least as onerous as the land use regulations that Measure 37 addresses. The beauty of the reform that I see in 406 is that it substitutes payment for the waiver that would cause that damage. Mm-hmm. If we do that, if we deal with the waiver problem, we won't have to create these new remedies.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Some names have been kicked around to join a task force or a work group on this bill, and I am particularly sensitive to the fact that if that work group is entirely filled with people who are opposed to Measure 37, it's probably going to skew the outcome of their work product.
Oh, I can't believe you say that.
Well, I can. I think that Oregonians are genuinely frustrated. And I don't think that it's too far down the line, or it's actually that far away for there to be an initiative just to repeal it altogether, the land use system. I think that day could happen. Let me ask you a question. Is there any other state in the union that will stop someone from building on a piece of property because it's zoned farm use?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson. The state immediately to the north of us has a Growth Management Act, which reflects a number of similar principles to those in Oregon. So there are urban growth lines or urban growth boundaries around the major rapidly growing parts of Washington State. There are low-density zones that apply to farm and forest land. I do not believe that the state of Washington's farmland zoning includes a provision similar to Oregon's, which says the dwellings to be allowed are dwellings for the farmer, dwellings for the farmer's family working on the farm, hardship dwellings for residents of the land, non-farm dwellings on unsuitable portions of the property, and farm worker dwellings, but not regular residential development. I think most states use an approach of keeping a very low density, a very large parcel size, but don't look to that critical problem that, for example, Washington County faces, where there are six houses in the exclusive farm use zone for every farm. You should talk to the Washington County Farm Bureau about the issues that they see. But what they tell me is that the level of impact from scattered residential development in the farm zone of the county is already at a point where it significantly interferes with real commercial farming. That's the issue that Oregon tries to get at with its rule.
Well, getting at that rule in Seattle or in the Willamette Valley is one thing, but I don't live in Seattle. I don't live in the Willamette Valley, and that rule doesn't work very well in southern Oregon or in eastern Oregon. I think that's part of the frustration. If you look at our counties that passed Measure 37, overwhelmingly, we look at the rules that are applied and written by special interest groups and by the agency in the Willamette Valley as just being out of control and out of touch with reality. That's our frustration.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, and I won't deny your frustration. I would observe that just as many agricultural landowners in Jackson County feel that frustration, in Jefferson County, in eastern Oregon, the Farm Bureau there successfully for several years after the passage of a lot of record provision on non-high-value farmland, persuaded their board of county commissioners not to change the local ordinance to allow those lot of record provisions, which were voluntary, because they were concerned about the impact on so-called not-high-value farmland. The Farm Bureau there has been adamant about trying to prevent additional non-farm dwellings on agricultural land, both high-value, irrigated, and non-irrigated.
Both my farm bureaus broke away from their farm bureau and supported Measure 37,
yes.
And I'm just concerned that this bill is just going to make it even more complicated and make people distrust the system even more. And it's going to be written, and the task force is going to be written and represented by people that were against Measure 37, and it's just another day in Salem is what's going to happen from this. Now, I don't want to be pessimistic because the chair is trying to control me and gavel me down. But, you've got this, your first point, payment, not waivers. I guess that's a topic for discussion down the road. But, we just had a bill on the floor yesterday granting one person some help, which is probably terrible public policy. I wish we could help everyone. I think we should help everyone, but the system doesn't work. And so as we're working on work groups, and there's a bunch of people out there and some names in your testimony that are going to be added to that task force, I hope there's some supporters of Measure 37, or I'll tell you, this senator ain't going to vote for it. If it's not fair and balanced and it's got some real people having some real input, and what I say by that is with all due respect, some citizens, maybe we shouldn't change Measure 37. Maybe 61% of Oregonians spoke loud and clear.
Senator Atkinson? I'm just going to weigh in for a second. I think 61% of the Oregonians spoke loud and clear to the frustration that you've articulated and that you have. I don't think 61% of Oregonians read Measure 37 and intended every comma and every word of that to become law. They voted yes, expressing the frustration. That's what I want our committee to do this session, and what I want the legislature to do is try to redress that frustration. And I think that's what we need to do. I am certainly aware that if there's going to be any solution coming out of this committee, it's going to, coming out of the building, it's going to have to be broad-based. That's the political reality of it. And I think Mr. Stacey presents one innovative idea, but believe me, I think everyone understands that any solution is going to have a lot of input. And if you want to be part of drafting some legislation, then come to a work group and do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I stand moderately corrected. However, I think people are very intelligent and knew what they were doing when they voted. We have a difference of opinion on that.
No, I think they threw the whole system up in the air, and now our job is to catch it as it comes back down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to point out to the, I think you mentioned the Washington County Farm Bureau and the Jefferson County Farm Bureau and a couple others, only one county in the state did not support Measure 37. So whereas these county farm bureaus or this county Thousand Friends or this county some other group may have successfully kept their county boards and their county commissions and their county planning divisions from making changes that they felt would be detrimental to them, the people of Oregon, 35 of the 36 counties, including Washington, Jefferson, Multnomah, every county but Benton County voted for this measure. So you can't say that the people in Washington County are frustrated by Measure 37 because they supported Measure 37. There may be people out there or groups or organizations in these specific counties that are unhappy with results, but the people of these counties, unless they're talking about Benton County, if you want to bring up that one, yep, Benton County, it was defeated in Benton County. But every other county that was passed.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, and in response as well to Senator Atkinson, the Vice Chair, if only people who campaigned against Measure 37 have a voice in a work group, it's not a work group. If we don't recognize that Measure 37 passed 61% to 39, we're insensate. We lost an election. We got a message. And we're going to work to try to implement the will of the voters. The details are what we're talking about. I sincerely believe that. And trying to achieve fairness rather than unfair outcomes along the road is a very important detail. But this work group that you refer to, if it does not have Oregonians in action and the constituencies represented by Oregonians in action, it's not a work group. And I don't guess we need to be there until draft 5 or 6. But I'd like to be there before draft 14.
Thank you, Mr. Stacey. Thank you. Harlan Levy? Excuse me, I have to step out for a minute.
You don't pass the bill.
Like there's a danger.
Harlan, go ahead.
Chair Atkinson, members of the committee, for the record, I am Harlan Levy, senior staff attorney with the Oregon Association of Realtors. First, let me again state to this committee on the record that we did not take a position on ballot measure 37. However, its passage will significantly affect business interests of our membership. With that being said, we cannot support this bill as written. Senate Bill 406 and most of the things that are contained within it, we have to oppose it strenuously. And the reason for that is primarily the bill creates a new tax on real property. That's what the bill does. Creates a new tax on real property, a new bureaucracy to administer that tax on real property, and provides for claims to be paid to some landowners whose property has been devalued by land use restrictions. What the bill does not do whatsoever is provide any regulatory relief. It does not provide for any land use reform, the land use reform that, in our opinion, the voters were crying out for when they passed ballot measure 37 with 61% of the vote. We can argue back and forth about what the voters intended with the passage of the ballot, but I will quote to you from the voters' pamphlet, the voters' pamphlet ballot title statement, and I quote, stated, government must pay owners or forego enforcement when certain land use restrictions reduce property value. Forego enforcement is significant. It was right there in the ballot title. If you subscribe to the theory that most voters end up reading only the ballot title and don't read the text, which I've heard bannered around, it was right there in plain sight. The idea that there was foregoing of enforcement or waiver, whatever you want to call it, was right there in the ballot title for the voters when they voted for ballot measure 37. So we implore this legislative body to take the message the voters wanted land use reform to fix the process where, in answer to the senator's question earlier to Mr. Stacey, no, we are not, or excuse me, we are the only state in the union that prohibits a landowner from building a single house on their property merely because it is zoned as farmland. We're the only state that does that. I was unable to find in my research another state, even states such as Washington, such as Vermont, states that have pretty significant regulatory regimes in existence. They may not allow you to subdivide your farmland, but they still allow you to build one single family dwelling for your family. This system needs to be reformed, and this bill does not provide any reform whatsoever. Senator Schrader, when he spoke to you earlier today, said that the bill contains waiver provisions. I am unable to find any of that in my reading of the bill. I read it when it came out. I read it this morning. I read it again when he was speaking. The closest thing that I could find is contained in Section 4 of the bill on page 4 where it talks about land or development benefits, but that is a modification, variance, or adjustment that is authorized by law, which by its very nature would not include any waiver provision unless you authorize waiver by law. So I could not find that in this bill. I don't know where it is. I'd be happy to stand corrected if somebody could show me where it is contained. What else does the bill do? In addition to the new development tax, in addition to the new bureaucracy it creates, in addition to the fact that it provides no regulatory relief whatsoever, it also imposes irrevocable deed restrictions on landowners who might be fortunate enough to obtain compensation. Those deed restrictions will run with the land in perpetuity, so that the open space, which has been created by this bill, would remain so in perpetuity. This is a confusing, an unwieldy claims process that is created in addition to the tax, in addition to the bureaucracy, in addition to the deed restrictions. And I can tell you that nobody voted for this bill when they voted for ballot measure 37. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Chair, I guess Harlan, you could have summed it up a lot easier in saying the bill is clearly unconstitutional, so that's a good reason right there to not support the bill as drafted.
Senator Ringo, Senator Beyer, I did notice the fact that it is a revenue-raising bill, which, according to the Constitution, is supposed to begin in the House of Representatives, but I figured that would be plain and obvious for the committee to see.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll catch up with you later on the details. I'm sorry I missed your testimony.
Scott Ashcombe, he left. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Bring him up three at a time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've distributed written testimony for you, so I'll be brief. The discussion has been pretty much focused on the revenue issue here, and I want to caveat our support for the bill by saying that we agree with Senator Schrader when he says that this bill is a good template for starting the discussion. And so in that spirit, we support the measure. Obviously, there has to be a considerable amount of discussion on any revenue matters that are contemplated in this bill at this time. We think the bill is a good starting point for discussion because all of the meetings that this committee has held and the House committee has held have had invited testimony up until this hearing, I believe. And at each one of those hearings that I've attended, I've heard one witness after the other, even supporters of Measure 37, even lobbyists for interest groups that were neutral on Measure 37, say that the measure needs to be clarified, that it's confusing, the language is confusing. It doesn't specify in enough detail what the process for filing a compensation claim has to look like. There's too much confusion on the part of local governments, not enough uniformity. We think that that Senate Bill 406, by trying to clarify the process of filing a claim for compensation under Measure 37, by defining the terms that have to be defined, and establishing a process to determine value, which is not a particularly easy thing to do, we think that that would answer the concerns that have been brought to this committee and to the House committee and make the process work. So in that spirit, we support it. I've included a 15-page article by Dr. Andrew Pantinga from OSU. He's in the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics, and the paper is Measuring Compensation Under Measure 37, an Economist's Perspective. In this paper, he lays out the difficulty of determining value of the real property and gives you three or four alternative methods for computing the value of a claim for compensation. So I hope you enjoy that paper.
I've read it.
It's a good bill, but we certainly hope that if a work group is appointed to amend the bill, that you consider the revenue aspect very carefully. And I'm certainly willing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions, committee?
Let's hear from the tax court, please. Bruce Miller, Jill Tanner. Never expected to see you guys in this committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Dingfelder. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm from the Office of the State Court Administrator, and we thought you might like to hear from us. With me is Jill Tanner, the presiding magistrate from the tax court. She's looked at the bill and has identified a few issues for the tax court and thought that she'd like to share that with you and, of course, make herself available to any questions you might have.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jill Tanner, and I'm the presiding magistrate of the Oregon Tax Court. Contrary to those that have come before me, I'm not opposing or supporting this bill. I'm merely here because the Oregon Tax Court is named as the nominated judicial body. And so from that standpoint, we have some preliminary observations that we've made having read the bill, and we'd also be more than happy to provide additional information or work on any work study groups that might seem appropriate. I've divided the remarks really into three areas, looking primarily first at the tax court jurisdiction. And since we're not a court that is familiar to many, and unless you have a need to be with us, you may not know that we are a trial court and we're not an appellate court. Our decisions are based on the evidence that's presented, and we're not a jury court. We have no juries. This bill appears to give the court appellate review functions. And if that's the case, then we believe that in order for that to occur, for the intent for the review appellate process to be one that we can undertake, we need a record. And that record needs to be provided by the governmental entities or those that are generated, and that would be in the form of transcripts or supporting information. So that's one area. Another one is...
Just to start, you don't do any appellate work right now. This would be a real shift in even focus looking at it in that context.
Yes, currently that's correct. Everything we do is based on the evidence that's presented to us, and we are a trial court. So that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And then just going on with that, I talk a little bit more about the tax court and with respect to some of the timelines that appear in the bill. We are one court with two divisions, and this bill, and we are staffed currently with one judge and five magistrates. And as you know, this bill has a 60-day window for the court's review of decisions that are rendered by a governmental entity or else this compensation and conservation authority. Also, the bill creates a 60-day window for the court to issue a declaratory judgment, and that's dealing with concerning with some determinations on the correct sharing ratios for compensation as among multiple governmental bodies. Now, those two types of activities, declaratory judgment actions and the appeals from the decisions that have been rendered, are all within a 60-day window. They would be added to the court's current tax load of cases that are currently before us, and some of those cases that we currently hear also have statutory priority. So we would have, and this may be an issue where the staffing may be adequate, but the deadline may not, or it may be an issue where the deadline is fine and the staffing might not be, and depending on the types of activities and the frequency, there may not be an issue at all. And I did find out the answer to one of the questions that we had. According to Senator Schrader, his anticipation with respect to this bill was that the process would begin in the magistrate division. And when we use the word Oregon Tax Court, since we're one court with two divisions, sometimes we're not sure what people are thinking. And he's indicated today through his testimony and explanation that he believes the process begins in the magistrate division.
Mr. Chair, may I interrupt here for a moment? One of the concerns that we had from that particular set of wording is it was unclear from the bill whether they mean the tax court judge or the tax court. And the distinction is important because if it goes to the judge, we have one of them. If it goes to the court, then perhaps it can go to the magistrate division, in which case there are more people to deal with. Okay.
Thank you. And along those same lines, the regular division does have the authority to hear declaratory judgments. Currently, under the statutes, the magistrate division does not. So there needs to be some coordination there among other statutes with this particular bill. And the regular division is a court of record, and the magistrate division is not a court of record. Now, all of these things just can be addressed at some point in time. And one final point is that the appeals under this bill, under House Bill 406, talks about the appeals from the Oregon Tax Court going to the Court of Appeals. Currently, appeals from the Oregon Tax Court from the regular division go to the Supreme Court. Magistrate division appeals go to the regular division of the tax court. So, again, how many layers of review was it anticipated with the appeal process? In other words, for subsequent review.
Mr. Chair, may I comment on that as well? And we're not suggesting that there's a problem with that evolution through the court system. We're just pointing out the difference that the regular statutory makeup right now is tax court to Supreme Court. Frankly, I don't think we want these going to the Supreme Court. We would prefer that they go tax court to Court of Appeals, but something that's worth thinking about.
Okay.
And just one final point. We would ask for some additional guidance. This would be a new undertaking for us, so some guidance with respect to how to review the record, maybe the appellate procedure, does the court decide value, and who determines what is owed. Some of those things that appear in some of the sections of the bill, we're not clear on.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say this is a long way from getting ready to be dropped in your lap. I thank you for coming. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we'll let Art Schlack come and round out this hearing.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer at this point. My name is Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And reading Senate Bill 406 takes me back about 4 years because I was one of those that was part of the work group that probably looked at draft one and kind of was looking all the way through in 2001 to the end of the session the various alternatives. We would like to just thank Senator Schrader for, I guess, bringing back a lot of history with this draft of Senate Bill 406 in terms of a lot of things that were discussed in 2001 and expressed that to you that there are a lot of issues still that need to be discussed, even around these concepts and other kinds of other concepts. Association of Oregon Counties and the counties provide a lot of information to the work group in 2001 with regard to property ownership and when lots were created, and a wealth of information, I think, dealing with rural issues. Some of these concepts in 406 were concepts that were developed with regard to trying to separate urban issues from rural issues. And that still may have some merit to be able to do that as we look at implementing Measure 37 at this point. Just want to express our interest in working on alternatives or fixes to Measure 37 at this point. We do have concern with regard to revenue. There's several different references here to property taxes and state income taxes. When we all look at the tax situation for all local governments, cities, counties, and the state, the revenue we have now is precious. Using some of those in this manner may have some serious consequences and limitations at this point in terms of trade-offs.
Do you think that the concept of transferable development credits has merit and that this committee should pursue it?
Chair Ringo, we looked at transfer of development rights or credits in 2001, and I still think it has some viability. Well, one of the serious problems that we had then, and you may have now, is the receiving areas. What areas would you transfer those credits to? And that was a limitation that we really couldn't get beyond. Given our program in the state of Oregon, and you know, if you're looking at a credit in the Willamette Valley and then transferring it to Malheur County, I mean, you've got to have a reason to, you know, for somebody to go there and do something. And
right.
So there's a balance as to the efficiencies of being able to do that. There may be some value and some application. I'm not sure exactly what it is at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. With that, Mr. Chairman, I just express our interest and willingness to help.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for testifying. Representative Dingfelder.
I was going to say, you're getting up too quickly, Art. Thank you. And it's been really interesting listening to the testimony. I think we have our challenges cut out for us. I have just a couple of questions regarding compensation to people who might benefit from the type of services that counties provide. And I think the conundrum here is trying to come up with a fair system. I mean, wouldn't you say that currently cities, counties, and special districts provide services that benefit many landowners in the state? Be fair to say that?
Chair Ringo, Representative Dingfelder, yes, we do.
And currently, do we ask folks who receive those benefits to compensate cities, counties, special districts for the added value that they get for the additional service?
No, we do not.
Okay, and would you say that
the only compensation at this point is that there's an increase in property, then they do pay potentially some additional taxes that go into the county or the cities or the special districts at this point. So they have that, and then some services, there's bonding that pays for services. So if there's bonding, then individual properties can contribute and pay those, pay off the debt service for those bonds.
Just follow up. Some of that's limited, in my understanding, because of the Measure 5 caps, though. Is that correct?
The tax situation
The is Measure 47, Measure 50.
That's correct.
Okay. I just bring that up because I think it's, you know, we forget or don't really pay attention to all the benefits that we receive as landowners, some more than others, from many of the services that are provided. And I think we need to have that discussion when we're talking about Measure 37. There's also benefits that we receive from the services that are provided that as land, and some landowners receive more benefits than others. I mean, an example would be if you're living next to a park, for example, then chances are your property value is probably going to go up because you're near a open space or whatever. And we don't, I don't think currently have a really good way of capturing that increase that I know of.
Chair Ringo and Representative Dingfelder, that's correct. And Senate Bill 406, one of the provisions does talk or does address the increases in value that is accrued to a piece of property because of the services that are provided by the local government that benefit that property. And so there is some increase in value, and how do you balance that between the increases that are attributed to the property by actions of local government versus limitations that through additional restrictions sometimes that would have a negative impact. And so how do you balance that equation?
Great. So just a final question. So would you consider that a new tax on, I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out, because to me it seems like that's in a way, I mean, if some people are gaining and other people are losing because of the types of restrictions or added values, that might be a way to balance. You know, basically, that's almost a market way to deal with it, because some people are gainers and others are losers under the system. Is that a fair assessment, you think?
Chair Ringo and Representative Dingfelder, I think what some of us that were working in 2001 and what's represented in the draft that you have before you is when we look at a demolition value, that you need to not only look at the land value and a reduction in land value, but you also need to balance that with the increases in value that were provided by services and facilities that were put in at a public expense that benefit the property. And so how do you get to that calculation? Right now we're only looking at a calculation based on a point in time and another point in time, and there's no balance there.
No, and just a final clarification. So Measure 37 does not address those, any of the benefits, correct? It's my understanding is Measure 37 just addresses any loss in compensation to a landowner, but it doesn't address the benefits to a landowner that may occur under services that, for instance, your counties provide.
Senator Ringo, Representative Dingfelder, to my knowledge, it doesn't provide a direct link. I mean, when you look at, you know, if we had appraisals and you looked at appraisal then and you looked at appraisal today, you might, the appraisal today may account for some of that increase in value. But at this point, we don't have a lot of information in the appraisals, I really can't say whether that's taken into account at all or to what degree.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 406, and we're going to open a work session on the introduction of committee bills.
Mr. Members of the committee, we have 7 LC drafts from various persons who requested their interest as committee bills, and if it's okay, I'll just read the LC numbers.
Go ahead.
That's LC 1367 relating to annexation plan within a metropolitan service district, LC 2109 relating to approval of single-family dwelling, LC 2166 relating to the Willamette River, LC 2175 relating to compensation for Oregon Forest Practices Act, LC 2183 relating to land use, LC 2450 relating to net metering, LC 2729 relating to students.
Okay. Chair moves that the the LC draft that were just discussed be introduced as committee bills? Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. And this Senate Committee on Environment and Land Use is now adjourned.